which might describe the contents of Frank Conrad's garage on the outskirts of Pittsburgh. Some say that that is where the modern broadcasting industry began. In 1920, Conrad's weekly broadcast from his garage led to the founding of KDKA, which is widely considered to be the world's first commercial radio station. For our occasional series, Lost and Found Sound, Joe Richman has the story of Conrad's garage.
The sounds that came out of Frank Conrad's garage in 1919 and 1920 are gone. There were no recordings made, and everyone who participated in those weekly broadcasts has died. In fact, there may be only one person still alive who actually heard what was going on in that garage, a man named Harry Mills.
This is K4HU. Hello, Charlie. W1HVA, here's K4HU. How are you this evening?
I'm pretty good. I'm a little sleepy.
Harry Mills is 94 years old. He was an engineer for RCA most of his life, but for the last 8 decades, he's been going on the ham radio just about every day. Mills first discovered radio in 1919. He was 12 years old, and his parents bought him a copy of the Boy Scout Handbook.
In the book, after a lot of the camping and setting up a tent in the rain and helping the old lady cross the street and so on, in the back was a chapter on how to build a wireless station. I had never heard of such a thing. So I built one. I'll show you how it works.
It was built out of photograph plates and tinfoil, a condenser, and this is weather stripping. And this is a Ford coil. Ford ignition coil, which would hook onto your antenna and you're on the air.
This is what radio sounded like when Mills first started. The dots and dashes of Morse code.
That's the letter V, which you use for test purposes. If he heard me, he'd come back and we'd hold a conversation. As simple as that.
Almost every night, Harry Mills would lie in his bed and listened to the amateur radio operator's signal back and forth. Then one night, he heard something different.
I remember it was 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and all at once, this voice appears. And I remember letting out a yelp or a shout of some sort, and my dad, who had just gotten out of the bath, come in wrapped in a towel to be sure I was all right. Something hadn't happened to me. And I said, "Dad, look, I'm hearing this fellow talking." And we shared the headphones. We only had one pair of headphones. And he allowed it. I was right.
Harry Mills had stumbled onto the experimental transmissions coming from Frank Conrad's garage, 35 miles away.
He was talking, and he says, "Now I'm going to play a phonograph record." And he did. It was astounding. I didn't know he could do that. To begin with, I hadn't heard voice before. And as I add that to music, it opens up a whole new world.
Frank Conrad was not the first person to talk and play music on the radio. Inventors like Reginald Fessenden, Lee DeForest, and Marconi had been doing such experiments as early as 1906. But back then, radio was seen as a method of one-to-one communication, like the telegraph. Few envisioned radio as a way to reach many people at the same time, to broadcast. Frank Conrad was among the first to use the word broadcasting. It was originally an agricultural term used to describe the distribution of seeds over a large area. In his garage, Conrad helped to change the concept of radio, and he did it largely by accident.
Testing, testing. Testing 1, 2, 3. Test 1, 2, 3. This is Frank Conrad from the garage. This is what it would have sounded like anyway.
It's probably fair to say that nobody cares more about Frank Conrad's garage than a man named Rick Harris. Harris is an amateur historian who has dedicated his life to preserving and researching the history of that garage. He's collected replicas of the equipment Conrad used, a microphone made out of the top of a candlestick telephone mounted in a small box stuffed with cotton, and a hand-cranked Victrola.
You turn the crank.
Rick Harris says the story of Frank Conrad's garage really begins with that Victrola. Conrad was an engineer for Westinghouse, so he had access to vacuum tubes, which allowed him to transmit his voice over the air. But at the time, Conrad wasn't thinking about broadcasting. He was simply trying to test and improve his transmitting equipment.
The problem was his voice, after talking endless hours into the microphone, would wear out. So he got the idea one day to put on a record that would give him 2 or 3 minutes to adjust his equipment and would save his voice. This one is an ancient one, so I don't know what it's going to sound like, though. And as soon as he started playing the music, he began getting requests for more music, and he would get phone calls and letters asking him to play a certain song at a certain time so someone listening with their crystal set could convince a relative that you could actually play music over the air. He found very quickly that there was an unseen audience out there.
People would call me up at night and ask me to transmit. They want said they had some friends want to listen to something coming out of the air.
This is Frank Conrad, recorded in the late 1930s, not long before he died.
And they finally got to take care of that. I sort of arranged to send the program twice a week, every Wednesday and Saturday night. First at that time, and I had no idea what it was going to end up into.
Over time, Conrad's garage started to sound more like a radio station. Along with phonograph records, Conrad would transmit piano solos by family members and baseball scores. And then, when he started to run out of records to play, Conrad went to the Hamilton Music Store and asked if he could borrow some for his broadcasts. The owner said yes, as long as Conrad agreed to announce the name of the store on the air. Slowly, Conrad was building the one thing the radio industry hadn't yet thought much about, an audience. But the real turning point came on September 29, 1920, when the Joseph Horn Department Store placed this ad in the Pittsburgh Sun.
Air concert picked up by radio here. The music was from a Victrola in the home of Frank Conrad. Mr. Conrad is a wireless enthusiast and puts on the wireless concerts periodically for the entertainment of many people in this district who have wireless sets. Amateur wireless sets are on sale here, $10 and up.
The ad really caught the attention of Conrad's boss at Westinghouse, a man by the name of Harry Davis, who, the story goes, called Conrad in the next day and said, essentially, I would like to put you out of business because I would like Westinghouse to set up its own station. And Davis asked Conrad, could that be done? And Conrad said, of course.
So over the next month, Conrad and his team began constructing a wooden shack on the roof of the Westinghouse plant. They built a 100-watt transmitter. And at 6 p.m. on the night of November 2nd, 1920, the newly licensed station, KDKA, went on the air.
This is KDKA of the Westinghouse Electric and Manufacturing Company in East Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We shall now broadcast the election returns.
The station launched by broadcasting the returns of the Harding-Cox presidential election. There were no recordings of that broadcast, but in the late 1930s, the original announcer, Leo Rosenberg, made this recreation.
We'd appreciate it if anyone hearing this broadcast would communicate with us, as we are very anxious to know how far the broadcast is reaching and how it is being received.
Well, nobody had ever heard of such a thing before. You had to wait till the next day to find out who won the election.
Harry Mills, who was 13 by this time, remembers going down to the local newspaper where they had set up a receiving station.
Somebody would sit at the receiver and a crowd gathered outside, or a number of people, and they would watch these returns being updated as the numbers came in bigger. The next day in the newspaper, of course, the talk was, gee, for the first time ever, people were able to get the reports before the newspaper was printed.
I think it's very difficult for us today to imagine really quite what a magical moment this was.
Susan Douglas is a professor at the University of Michigan and the author of Inventing American Broadcasting. She says the KDKA election broadcast was a watershed event.
And because there were no connecting wires, because there was this concept of the ether, there was kind of a cosmic connection for people. It was a quasi sort of spiritual event that these voices were coming out of the air into your home.
And 2 weeks after that first transmission, Westinghouse introduced the first radio for the general public, the Areola Junior, which sold for $25. The broadcasting boom had begun, and over the next few years, radio would move out of the garage and into the living room.
Sounds wonderful. It's KDKA Pittsburgh. Wherever you go.
Today, KDKA is considered the oldest radio station in the country. history has not been as kind to Frank Conrad's garage. This fall, bulldozers began to clear the site. It will soon be a Wendy's. The bulldozers destroyed Conrad's house, but Rick Harris and a group of supporters called the Conrad Project managed to save the garage, piece by piece.
The woodwork, all of the doors, the windows, and some 25,000 or so bricks, the ones that survived anyway. I don't know. It's just the more I learn about Frank Conrad and what he did and the fact that he's virtually unknown outside of Pittsburgh, it just something, it feels that he's been overlooked for what he did.
Someday, Harris hopes to reconstruct Conrad's garage and turn it into a museum. Frank Conrad may have helped to launch the modern broadcasting industry, but that wasn't really his vision. Conrad was just a talented engineer tinkering late at night in his garage, trying to connect to people through the air. And that pretty well describes what 94-year-old Harry Mills is still doing every night at 10 o'clock.
W1UEA, here's K4HU. Thank you, guy. Yes, I'm reading you very well.
After all this time, Harry Mills says he still feels the same way he felt when he first heard Frank Conrad's voice coming out of the radio.
To me, it's difficult to describe the fascination of it. I know I use it all the time. How does it happen? Can't see the fella. There's no wires going from here to there, but you can talk to him. It was a phenomenon that interested me from the beginning. I presume it's safe to say that has... I've never gotten over it. So with that, I'm going to say good night. Thanks for the use of your loudspeaker. So good night, Bob, and good night, Guy. W1TRF, K4HU.
Okay, very good. Good night, Harry. Good night, Guy. W1TRF. Good night, all.
Joe Richman produced our story about Conrad's Garage for Lost and Found Sound. For more on the subject, you can go to our website, npr.org.